Brand new show, with Peaches, and DJ Motai.
What's going down? It's your homie Dope Beezy, the Southeast Beast.
What's going on, man? It's your boy Jack Freeman, H-Town representative.
It's your boy D-Lo, man.
It's Cab the Don, man.
What's good, Space City, the great city? It's your boy Roos Williams.
Hi, this is Booker T, five-time WCW champion, and you're listening to the Brad Gilmore Show. Now, can you dig that, sucker?
Okay. Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of the Brad Gilmore Show.
On demand.
On demand.
Yeah.
Still no on demand, Peaches?
No.
No.
How long are we going to, you know, continue doing this for? What's up?
Because I'm consistent.
You're consistent? I don't know why I said it like that. You are consistent. I actually don't have any grievances about you not being consistent.
See?
I guess so.
Anyway, everybody, we have a great show for you today. Once again, our third week in a row. But we flipped the script on them a little bit today, right, Peaches?
We did.
The flip
we
has
did.
Been script.
We flip on myself the today.
Script has been flipped.
Wait, the script has been... I flipped script on both of y'all, all right? I brought y'all into my world, brother.
Are we going to let them guess what it is? No.
No, I think...
They'll find out.
They're going... If they hit play on the podcast, they already see who's on it.
Yeah, that's true.
Dummy. Anyway, we interviewed the legendary Booker T and Kelly Kevin from ROW. Peaches, how'd you feel? Were you out of your element, Peaches?
I feel like Brad made me miss getting a picture with Kelly. And
okay, for people who don't know, we did the show live from Booker's wrestling school, and in the back was a WWE superstar and also a movie actor, I guess, from The Longest Yard, the great Khali, he's over like 7 feet tall or something like that. Peaches wanted
he's
a picture.
He's 7 foot one.
He's 7'1"?
Yes.
Do you have stats on him, Peaches?
Yes.
Peaches is such a diva, Tyler. She's mad that she didn't get a picture. She does this over the phone again.
Right.
Peaches, what are we going to do with you?
Man, look, I told you what the dilemma was in the car. You get to stand, I have to squat.
Peaches.
That's how I feel.
Anyway.
That's really how I feel. And I'm
now
not going to be inconvenienced by the lack of cleaning that goes on. I'm just not.
Hey, don't you dare talk down on the Brown Sugar Studios.
It's not a restroom.
It's a facility in the studio.
Okay.
I'll let you
We'll take them. That.
We'll take that. Now, this interview, it covers Booker and Kelly's like kind of career in professional wrestling, which I'm a huge fan of professional wrestling. I work as a ring announcer for Booker T. It was a real treat for me to get to interview him, even though we had a little technical difficulties
at first.
A little bit. You know,
we got it though.
It's fine. You know,
you can still hear what we're saying.
Duh. So it's gonna be fine. Trust me though, the interview picks up.
I learned that wrestling. You know what I learned today?
What's up?
I learned that wrestling is an excuse for oversized men to be theatrical.
It's not an excuse, Peaches. It's just
performing arts. They do theater on stage, and they figure it's okay because they get hurt while they're doing it. So it's like manly or something.
It's manly theater.
You're
right. It's a form of manly theater.
It's like Shakespeare on steroids.
What did you learn today, Tyler?
A little bit more about wrestling and,
I'll use a lot of terms. People who aren't avid wrestling listeners who are listening to this, we use a lot of wrestling terms which might be foreign to y'all.
They.
Brad thinks he's a wrestler now.
I don't think I'm a wrestler. I'm just in the business.
You told the great Khali you were.
I told the great Khali I was the top wrestler in ROW, but it was a joke.
Yeah, but I couldn't even get a picture. See how that works? See how selfish that is?
Peaches, I'm sorry. I told you, we're going to get you a picture with the great Khali. I promise.
I'm only upset because I told you twice that messing around with you, I was going to miss him.
I didn't think that we could miss him walking out.
And then you put me in there and you let me get a peek at him. But you didn't let me get
them. Yo, y'all don't understand how excited Peaches was when she found out the great Khali was in the school.
Yeah.
You have no
That's
idea.
That's her favorite character from The Longest Yard.
It is.
People who don't know, he was in The Longest Yard. He was the guy who played ping pong. He had subtitles for everything he said in the movie.
He broke that guy's nose. He broke it.
He broke in my nose.
Exactly.
Okay, Peaches, I'm sorry. Accept my apology so the listeners don't think we have a
quarrel. I'm just sad because I almost got excited.
She almost got
I'm
excited.
Glad that I did it.
You actually, you
because
got real life
excited. Because every time I get excited, I get disappointed. This is a case of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes when you get excited, you get tongue-tied, Peaches.
Because now I'm upset. Now I'm upset because I think about it all over again. And now I'm sitting over here thinking about the fact that I actually got upset and it didn't happen.
But you got to see him.
I peeked at him.
You peeked at him?
It's your fault. I saw him, and we were standing in the same spot. So it's your fault you didn't look.
Tyler, right now is not the time for your shit, okay?
Hey, we over the phone.
Oh, Peaches is big and bad over the phone.
Morning. I have a fake morning attitude because I didn't get to see him.
I woke up today on the fake wrong side of the bed.
It's too early to be arguing about this right now.
Yeah, Peaches.
Exactly.
It's too early.
I have a fake Monday morning attitude right now.
But wrestling, I know this is a different kind of vibe for the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand, but we're going to step out of the boundaries every now and
then. We're expanding. We're becoming culture.
You know, we've almost done 100 shows. Culture. You know, and this might be the third Brad Gilmore Show on Demand, but new listeners, we're not new at this, all right? We've been doing this for a while. You know, Peaches, it's going to be a year for you next month. Me and Tyler is going to be 2 years for us next month, and we're just rocking here. Peaches?
I'm upset.
Are you still thinking about the great Khali?
Yeah.
Peaches, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying.
Okay, whatever, Peaches. Whatever, all right? It's my mistake.
You know, you've been beside yourself all day, Brad.
Peaches,
all day.
Hey, first of all, it's 8 o'clock in the Monday morning. I don't know how you've known me all day.
Well, you've been beside you've been beside yourself since before you went to sleep.
Hashtag fake Monday mornings. No, okay, but to be honest with the listeners, you know, Booker T, I grew up watching him. So, I mean, to get to interview him on the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand was a real treat for me, okay? And, listeners,
y'all... It was exciting.
We got to sit in his office with all of his figures.
That's a grown man that has action figures.
Of himself. So it's not weird.
And the other half-naked men.
Hey, Peaches, they're not half-naked. They're three-quarters naked, first of all. It's
three-quarters?
They're only wearing tights, like underwear. That's three-quarter naked, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Hey, don't make fun of wrestling, Peaches, because all the hardcore wrestling marks.
Whatever.
Okay, whatever. Let's just get into DJ Motai's Monday. Is it the Monday morning music mix today?
I guess we can do the Monday morning music mix today.
Peaches, are you okay with the Monday morning music mix?
Did I pick it, or can I pick it?
No, are you okay with it?
Do you want to pick it?
I should pick it.
What song do you want to hear right now, Peaches? We'll play the first song for you.
I want to hear the Whisper song by the Ying Ying Twins.
No, we're not doing that.
We can't play that.
We're not doing the Whisper song.
I think that's Brad to rap it.
On 8 a.m. No, I can rap. I'll rap something else to you later over the phone, like you rap or you like you do your intros over the phone. But this is running lengthy.
What?
DJ Motai. Let's get into DJ Motai's Monday morning music mix here on the Brad Gilmore Show.
On demand.
On demand.
I know what I want to hear. I know what I want to hear.
What?
Okay, hurry up.
I want to hear the Stocks and Dallas song.
The what? Stocks and Dallas
the
song.
Stocks right.
Okay,
Dallas
we'll
song.
Start off with Slow It Down by Stocks featuring Corbin Dallas of 2011 here on the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. Yeah. Bow, 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 bow.
Box music.
Roach. Fat bitch cut me off when I'm driving, so I gotta say, fuck you. Jehovah's Witness at my door when I open that shit, and I'm like,
fuck you, fuck you, fuck you.
I'm feeling very stone cold, harder than a rock. It's like all of mankind is on the Undertaker's clock. Fuck a suffocating sock, I'ma punch your face and knock everybody out the ring. I said I'm gonna take your spot. Well, let me calm it down, running past my homies. Gotta keep it real, never happy to be phony. They act like they'll get back to you, but that shit is baloney. I'ma light the blood and pass it to the moment. Then we gon' wake up,
contestant number one, but still alive in round three. You gotta stay humble in this jungle, cause this life is a royal rumble.
Heartbroken, but you open to new things, and I know this. You were looking, and I noticed your lipstick, too potent, leaving stains on the paper you smoking. Inhale, then we'll head to the hotel. Well, really, I'm joking. I don't ever play the bogus games. I'm frank in the ocean like Novocaine. Trust me, girl, I know the pain. You done it all and I've done the same. You feel the past, but I heal pain. You weren't searching for love, but I still came. You the kind of girl to get my real name. That's first and last, I hope it lasts. Past forever, we match together. You feel me, right? Yeah, whatever. Love, rain, I dare the weather. Then we'll French kiss under umbrellas like Ella, Ella, ay, ay. We can make love all day, ay. Listen to what I say, ay. Baby, just come and lay with me tonight. But we both know how this ends. Just as fast as in again. While we get a chance, slow it down. She said, sometimes I'm goody goody. Right now I'm naughty naughty. Sometimes I'm goody goody. Right now I'm naughty naughty. She said,
sometimes I'm goody goody. Right now I'm naughty naughty. I'm just in town for the night. I'm trying to party party. Not here looking for somebody. But you look like that somebody. The type to rock my boat and sail the stream inside my body.
I bring out a young thing on nights like this. She sing for a living, always sipping on a fifth. And when I'm near her, I wanna give her a kiss. But I don't think my girlfriend would like that shit. I'm at Mango's, hanging with some dang hoes. They're 23, but act 16 years old. They get toe up and wanna hit the dance floor. But to spaz off beat with their two left feet. I am so damn beat, I need to go to sleep. But I think that I'll probably be up for the rest of the week, being bored as a whore and aborted a bordello or a fellow in a nunnery. Fuck it though, I settle, even though it's loud as heavy metal and hot as a kettle. Brain distorted like a metal. Ain't I on another level? I am faded, half naked, wasted, trying to get home, but I don't know if I'ma make it home. I don't know if I'ma make it there. Damn, why'd I have to take it there? I need a phone and some cab fare. I'm stoned all alone and I'm unprepared. I don't know if I'ma make it there. Damn, why'd I have to take it there? I need a phone and some cab fare. I'm stoned all alone and I'm unprepared.
Alright everybody, welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show on demand. We have a great show for you today, don't we, Peaches? Peaches, get off your phone. We're doing an interview.
Don't yell at me.
She's got a Laffy Taffy and she's on her phone.
Peaches.
Whose side are you
there's
on?
There's a thing called professionalism.
I'm kind of on Brad's side.
You need to make it to that
Brad
level.
Brad been beside himself since we pulled up.
Hey, I'm
do you eat when you're at work?
Red.
Do you eat on the job?
Yes, actually. I went to work with a lollipop in my mouth yesterday.
That's really classy, Peaches.
It is.
Great job on the lollipop. I'm sure the little kids really like that.
They did. They asked for one. We played
right, it's
with
not about
water
you.
Balloons.
It's not about you today. Let's stop it for a
you
second.
Really beside you? I'm going to let you
Peaches, don't
it.
Look. Don't
I'm
look.
Not going to embarrass you because you have to go back to work with these people.
These people? Who are these people? Okay,
I'm not going to tell
you.
Let's
not even get into that right now. All right? That's for another podcast. Let's stop it. Stop. You ready? Can I continue? Okay. We have a good show for you today. We have two amazing guests. Two people who I've gotten to know over the past few months. And I'm just going to introduce him right now. First, I'm going to introduce the man sitting to my right. His name is Kevin. He goes by Kelly Kevin, for people who are fans of PWAROW. He's kind of the mastermind behind a lot of things that go on. here in ROW, which is the reality of wrestling, which we'll talk about for people who don't know what that is. Been a wrestling fan majority of your life, I'm assuming.
Yes, sir.
And then the man over here sitting behind the desk, like a mafioso, he is the 5-time WCW champion. He's a 1-time world champion. A lot of the times they refer to him as a tag team specialist. And most importantly and most recently, he is a member of the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2013. His name is Booker T.
What's going on, man?
How you doing? You doing good today?
Hey, man. Another day in paradise. You know, I woke up this morning.
You always got to thank God for another day, right?
Hey, man. I always say it, you know. You never know what's going to happen from day to day, you know. So whenever time you open your eyes that morning, you know, thank God every day.
Definitely. Kev, how you feeling today, Kev?
I'm feeling real good. Feeling real good up here at the training school. Getting nice to work out in for this interview.
This is the first interview we've ever done on location. I just want to share that.
I don't know who this Brad is. Like, I've just really...
What are you talking about?
I really... This is so new. Brad is... First of all, he's never this calm.
It's hot in here.
Shush.
Let me get my green
Second
tea.
Of all...
I didn't take my caffeine pill.
He's never disrespectful.
Hey, well, you know.
This you gotta realize.
You gotta respect your elders. You know what I mean? That's
probably. I am his elder.
Booker's an OG, Peaches.
I'm an OG.
He's an old geezer.
I ain't an OG. I old geezer. I'm an old gangster, but I'm still an OG.
You mean original gangster?
Old.
Whatever.
Old.
Okay. Anyway, she understands, Book. She doesn't understand.
You're somebody I've
watched on television my entire life.
I'm impressed with how he's acting. I need you to come with me more often.
You know, maybe,
if this gets him to act this way. Because typically in public, I have to put him on like a leash.
Hey, you know how men are.
Yeah. First of all, Peaches,
hey,
I don't know why you're talking like
that. Hey, don't go too far in front of company. You about 2 seconds closer to what you need to be close to.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, me either, but it's fine.
Ladies and gentlemen, Peaches.
Hi.
So, this is a new area for us. We're getting into the sports world now, so I'm really excited.
This is brand new for me, so I'm a little restless.
Peaches was on Twitter. She was like, give me all the information you know about Booker T.
Hey, yeah. That's a whole lot of information you need to know.
What did someone say about his British accent? They were tweeting about your British accent. They were going crazy.
They wanted to know why you did it.
Oh, man, you know, you just got to be different. You got to be creative. You can't be one of the guys that want to stay at the back of the class. You want to go to the front of the class. You want to be the first one to, you know, raise your hand. You know, and that's what that's all about, just going out there and being articulate and trying to be different, you know, trying to bring entertainment to all my fans, you know.
So for someone listening who might not be familiar with you, what would you tell them?
Would they be able to move?
I mean, okay, for instance, myself, I've heard your name. I'm aware of who you are, but I might not know of your accolades as someone who follows wrestling as in depth, you know, as wrestling fans. So what would you, like, if you had to give me one sentence that sums you up, you know, for me to be like, okay, that's who that is, what would you say?
Can you dig it, sucker?
That's a good one.
By the way, you made it onto the intro of the show. You did, like, I don't know if you remember, you did a drop for the radio.
Yeah.
And we played at the beginning. I echoed the sucker, so it's so epic. It's an epic sucker.
Everybody is really excited at the end. They're like, oh my God, is that Booker T?
You know, I think it's, you know, I've had a long career. It's been, you know, 23 years coming up in December. And it's been a hell of a ride, you know. It's been, you know, a dream that I never had. You know, but it's a dream that I really never want to wake up from as well, you know. So it's been unbelievable wrestling business. Yeah.
Now, you say it's a dream that you never had. What do you mean by that? That you didn't aspire to be this when you were younger, or what was the deal with that?
Like, you know, most wrestlers, like Kevin, you know, grew up wanting to be professional wrestlers, you know, but... You know, you can read my book, you know, Booker T from Prison to Promise, Life Before the Squared Circle.
Oh, nice book.
You
plug.
Can actually...
That was a nice book. You know. He's a pro.
I'm going to have to get that. You know, I'm a reader.
Yeah, he's a pro.
You know, you can get a chance to see what Booker T was like before wrestling. You know, wrestling just something that happened to fall into my lap. And, you know, I saw it as a way out. And I took it, you know, took a chance on me. And it paid off.
You see, I have been, you know, I've obviously followed your career the majority of my life, and And I know you started in the GWF, right, with your brother Stevie Ray.
Yeah.
And what y'all had a different name at first, right? What was it?
The Ebony Experience.
The Ebony. Which one of y'all came up with that one?
Well, it was a name that my brother collaborated on because there was this wrestler back in the day. His name was Mr. Ebony. Uh-huh. He wore a mask and it was a black guy. You know, so we just took the Ebony, you know, from him. You know, we were two black guys, and everybody was about to go on and have an experience, you know, with something new coming to Dallas, Texas.
Booker, if I put a mask on and become the Ivory Express,
I was about to say, me and Kevin are about to make the Ivory train.
It wouldn't work.
Oh, no. I might pay for that.
Never mind. Bad idea. I'm allowed to have one every once in a while.
But okay, so you're in the Ebony Express with your brother.
Ebony Experience.
My bad.
People always want to say Ebony Express.
I don't know why. I was just saying
that Express.
Lex Express.
Lex Express.
You can't forget the Lex Express.
Ebony. You know, people always called us that too. You know, we went to WCW. Yeah, I remember you guys, the Ebony Express. You know, it was always the Ebony Express.
How long did it take for y'all to get to WCW? And who found y'all? Who spotted you out? Who was like, man, they're
about 18 months. In the Global Wrestling Federation, and then we got spotted by Sid Vicious, who told us he wanted to get us in WCW and make us a project, as far as him looking to maybe expand and get into the office, and work from that perspective as well, and who's going to be his guys. And we came in and we did a pretty good job. I mean, two guys coming in off to from Houston, Texas, with no ties to the business, and we got noticed only by our talent on in the Global Wrestling Federation, being on ESPN Monday through Friday. I always said that television exposure was worth its weight in gold.
Yeah.
And it paid off, by somebody finally seeing us and spotting us and giving us a shot.
It must have been crazy to be on ESPN. And that was usually with GWF. And I know Vern was on there, with the AWA and whatnot. And, I'm sure you watched ESPN when you were,
That's what was crazy about it. I couldn't believe I was on ESPN Monday through Friday, and I was still working a regular job 6 days a week. On the other hand, I would go places like to Japan and, to Korea and to Virgin Islands, and I would be a star there. And I was still working a 6 day a week job back at home. So it was kind of crazy. I was like, wow, man, this is really, really crazy, first time I had ever been on a plane was, I'd never been out of Texas before. I'm on a 15-hour flight to Japan, so it was just...
That was your first trip ever?
It was my first trip ever, it was kind of culture, I wouldn't say culture shock, but it was like a culture, earthquake. Because it was so cool, it was so cool. I was like, wow, and it was a learning experience as well. I guess that was my education.
Yeah. So you made it to WCW, and that's when I want to take it over to Kevin. I want to know, what was your earliest memory of Booker T?
I was a big fan. I grew up wrestling all my life. That's all I ever watched was wrestling. And, of course, when he came into WCW, doing the Harlem Heat thing, him and Stevie, you couldn't beat Harlem Heat. Harlem Heat versus Steiner Brothers, or Harlem Heat versus the Outsiders was the main event. And it was one of the last times, really, that main event could be a tag team match. There weren't many, after that
mid-90s, that was like tag team
matches back then. You had tag team matches that finished off cards. You don't have that anymore. You don't have those tag teams that's what they are. They are a tag team. Now it's two single guys normally put together. Normally mid-card guys, no offense to anybody, but that's normally what it is. Back then you had two main event guys, people that could hold the whole card. Definitely. So that was when I started. And one of my earliest things, I've told the story a few times, around the gym and to people, and then told it to Book a few times, get a kick out of it. One of my first real memories of Booker T was I was probably about 11 or 12 years old. I just moved to Texas.
Uh-huh.
And my best friend's mom came saying, I just met this wrestler at the bank. He came to the bank and he gave me his number and said to call him and he would talk to y'all. So we're like, who was it? It was Booker T. So we're like, nah, you're full of it. There's no way you actually met Booker T at the bank and he gave him your number. Sure enough, Booker called at 7 o'clock that night, called our number, talked to us for about 10, 15 minutes, And we couldn't believe that somebody at his style, you know, his caliber would take his time out of his day.
And this is when he was in WCW?
Yeah, he was WCW top guy. He was already out from Harlem. He was tagger. He was, I think, the TV champion at the time. And, yeah, he called just to say hey to two kids that he met at the mom at a bank. I'm like, man, how cool is that? You know, just somebody at his caliber would do that to keep, you know, for somebody.
Do you remember that at all?
Yeah, heck yeah. You know, I mean, my mother always said, it doesn't cost you anything, you know, to do anything. Do something like that, you know, please, thank you, yes, ma'am, no, sir. You know, it doesn't cost you anything to do that, and it can take you so far in life, you know what I mean? Just, you know, making an impression, you know, one, you know, it's such a huge thing, you know, but if you can just do it with so many, that's the key, really, you know, to, you know, for me, actually, you know, outside of wrestling, I'm trying to, you know, reach youth and show them that it's, you know, life can be really good if you really work hard. You know, if you put yourself in a good position to succeed, you know, but if you don't, you know, you're going to fail every time, you know, so that's my mission right now, you know, and Kevin was just one, you know, and there's so many Kevins, you know, that I've tried to, you know.
You're down a dozen, Kevin.
I wouldn't say that, but there's so many kids that I've, I always say Muhammad Ali was my idol, you know, and I was a bad kid, I was a trouble youth. And I got a picture on the wall.
I know. Every time you say his name, I
see. Yeah, I want to have that happen.
Yeah. Oh, he invited me to his room, but that's another story. But I always say Muhammad Ali was my idol when I was a kid, and I used to get in so much trouble. You know, nobody could tell me anything, and I always said Muhammad Ali told me I would have taken that same thing everybody else had told me, and I was taking it and run with it, just because he told me. You know, to do it, you know what I mean, and told me I could do it, you know, and I'm in that position now, and I can touch people that perhaps, you know, motivate them to do something, you know, with their lives.
Man, I mean, it's crazy, like, you know, like you said, like Muhammad Ali, if he would have told you to do something, you know, when you were watching him, you would have done it, right? But I mean, I've read your book, From Prison to Promise, you know, Life Before the Square Circle. You can get it on Amazon, you can get it on the iTunes bookstore.
Barnes & Noble's.
Hey, they were sold out, by the way, at Barnes & Noble.
We tried to make sure we get them taken care of.
I'll let you know. But growing up, You got into some legal issues.
Yeah.
Obviously the book's called From Prison to Promise.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know, who haven't read the book, don't give too much away out of the book, but let them know what happened. How'd you end up in that situation?
Well, it's easy to end up in a situation when you really don't know the situation that you're in. You know, and sometimes it can be too late. And you realize, you know, you're in way over your head. It's something I was involved with a group of friends, friends that I actually grew up with from childhood. And when one guy was, you know, he wasn't a friend from childhood. He was the motivating factor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I always tell young people not to be followers, you know, because at that time, that's what I was doing. I was following. I was just going along with it. But we got involved with one aggravated robbery that, you know, ended up being two. Three, and it just kept going on and kept going on until we finally got caught. And we never thought we could get caught, you know, but when we got caught, you know, life changed for me, you know. I was like, wow, you know, you can really get in trouble, you know, with this kind of stuff, you know. But that's why I always tell young people to watch the news, you know what can happen to you, you know, if you do find yourself in a situation such as I was in, you know what can really happen to you. Maybe will deter you to go down another road if you know you can get 5 to 99 years for doing something like that. Or if you murder somebody, you know, you can get the death penalty according to what kind of murder it is, you know. Just know the law, first and foremost, to know that's not a place that you really want to be. Don't have to, have that experience that I had going to prison, being locked behind, you know, bars, you know, being in that cell, you know, being told when to get up in the morning and, you know, take a shower and get ready to go to work and come back. And, you know, I mean, it's not a life that you really want to live. But for me, I can honestly say it perhaps was an experience that I really, really needed to go through to know what life really meant.
Now, I know, I remember we had a conversation one time, and you were telling me about some guy tried to, some guy came up to you in prison, right? And he was like, can I run with you, or can you run with me, or something that, right?
I mean, you know, I mean, people want protection, you know, and I was a pretty big guy. I wasn't a bad guy or anything. I was actually a pretty nice guy in prison.
You were well-liked amongst your peers?
No, I really was. I was well-liked, you know, amongst my peers. I mean, the guards and, you know, even the staff liked me. They respected me more than anything because I respected them.
Yeah.
You know, I always gave them the respect that I feel like they should have gotten from an inmate. And in turn, you know, they say, wow, this guy may not be such a bad guy, you know, so they would treat you a certain way. They would do favors for you, you know. But like I said, I was a big guy, and I was a, you know, lifted weights, you know. And this kid came in, he was pretty scared, and he wanted to ride with somebody, which means, you know, he wanted some protection, you know. And when guys protect, you know, want protection, you know, they'll buy you, you know, food, take care of you, you know, whatever, you need some money, whatever, you know, everything's taken care of. But I took care of him, and I actually got into a scuff with a guy. And it wasn't a fight. I actually barked, you know, really, really loud, you know, trying to make the guys afraid. But in turn, I was more afraid than he was. But you know, if you act like it, then, you know, 10 times out of 10, people believe you. At least 9 times out of 10, people believe you. So I always just tried to play the part. I would always act the part, you know, even if I didn't know I could pull it off or not, I would try it most of the time.
You think if y'all actually would have, like, locked up, do you think he would have taken you?
No. I mean, I'm a pretty tough guy. I've always known how to fight, and I don't think he could have beat me or anything like that, but I didn't want to fight. It wasn't about me fighting. It was about me acting like I wanted to fight. This guy backed down. Everybody see it. Nobody else want to mess with me, you know, so it's a ploy, you know.
And then you, like, yeah, stay up all night and just, yeah, like, yeah, stand down.
You know, everybody saw me, you know, bloodshot eyes the next morning, got to go to work in the fields. But, you know, but that was the experience, you know. I wouldn't even say it was a bad experience, you know. You know, most
saying prison wasn't a bad experience?
No, I really don't think it was. It wasn't a bad experience for me. I guess because I've lived perhaps harder on the outside than I did on the inside.
What do you mean by that?
Coming up in life, you know, growing up, you know, losing my parents at a young age, you know, learning how to, you know, get through from day to day, you know, knowing if the light's going to be turned on and turned off the next day, you know.
What part of Houston did you grow up in?
South Park. Yeah, pretty rough area. That's, but, you know, you never really miss what you never had, but I'm just saying, you know, so I don't look at prison as a bad experience. The county jail was a bad experience.
That was worse than prison.
Yeah, it was.
County jail. What happened to you in there?
Nothing happened to me, but you're just in one space. You know, only place you can go to is up to the, you know, roof to go and work out, you know, and, you know, shoot basketball or something like that. But you're in one space. You're in a dorm area, and you're in there with a bunch of inmates, you know what I mean, a bunch of guys. You're in one area. It was such a mind, testing task, you know, to be able to deal with something like that.
You can use profanity if you need to.
I mean, it worked your mind because I was there for, you know, like 8 months, you know, in the county
jail. In the county jail?
Wow. Get my case reset over and over, you know, going through the court system. But it was literally a mental challenge, something you had to really go through from a perspective where you just, like, know where you're at, and, you know your situation, and know that it's not going to last forever.
All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We're going to have DJ Motai play us a little music, and we're going to be back with the legend himself, Booker T, and ROW's own Kelly Kevin, and trust me, the audio is going to sound a little better, all right? It's going to sound like this, all right? So make sure you stay tuned in. Brad Gilmore Show on demand, DJ Motai. Let's hear some music, guy.
Damn, girl, saw you cross the bar, now I'm your fan, girl. No more drinks for me, this my one chance, girl. The way you wear that dress, wanna be your man, girl. I'm just playing, girl, go. Take you to
used to Egyptian cotton. So the silk will have you spoil your riding. Got our lips locking and our feet touching. Shaka Khan, I'm about to tell you something. Good? Have you been on California King? Moving around his bed like it was a damn boxing ring. Doing crazy things, forget about our slumber. But after this, you gon' have a real sleep number. Who lordy? Bed shaking, looking bad in that red dress like Satan. I mean Satan. Wait, is that the fabric? Come a little closer. I just wanna grab it. Oh yeah, girl. That feels nice. Oh, feel these sheets. Yeah, I know. They feel right. Now you're laughing, but not for too long. Open the door and see the bed you about to get on. I wanna know about your thread count. Me and you in the room and it go down. Yeah, I'll see you in that red skirt. Now take it off and baby, we can do work. No sheets, on tie. Off a cover, girl, don't stop. Keep rock till 2 or 3 o'clock. Like, now what would you do for a Klondike? That thing tight, it's a good look. I can flip it like a page in a good book. The ball solid and the head right. Got your body shaking now, real water bed like. That sound nice, I'm a fan girl. Let's make a flick on the man girl, huh. I can't lie and you're so damn fine. I got a habit like a rabbit on Soul of the Sun.
And we're back here live on the Brad Gilmore Show on Demand. We're here with Kelly Kevin and the legend himself, Booker T, the 5-time WCW champion. You're still good over there, Book?
Yeah, heck yeah, man, always.
So we left off talking about prison, and I watched your Hall of Fame speech, and you know, I had to pay the $7.99 to see the full speech.
Yeah.
It was worth every dollar.
Yeah, heck yeah.
Stevie Ray's. You know, a speech before to bring you out.
Intro.
His induction, whatever it was, it was great. But what I gathered from it was he's the one who kind of pitched the idea of, hey, Book, we could be wrestlers.
Well, I wouldn't say he necessarily said it like that. You know,
yeah.
My brother and I, we always watched wrestling coming up. You know, he was a much bigger fan, I think, than I was. In certain aspects, as far as him going to the matches and whatnot, and having a means to do that, my brother's a few years older than I am. You know, when he had a car, you know, he was, you know, would get with his friends, and that's one of the things that, you know, he would do. Myself, I only went to a couple of wrestling matches when I was a kid. You know, growing up, you know, but I watched, I loved it. You know, I watched, you know, staying up on Saturday night and watching it, and then, you know, getting right back up on Sunday morning and watching the same show.
Jumping off the couch and stuff.
You know, Junkyard Dog and all the guys. You know, I mean, I really had a passion for the entertainment. I knew what it was all about even back then, but I loved it. You know, it was kind of like watching a cartoon.
Yeah.
From a certain perspective. And, my brother, it was something, you know, my brother, I've always followed my brother around, just like he said on his induction for me. I was a big Stevie Ray fan, you know, more than anything, you know. And whatever he wanted to do, I was willing to be right there, you know, backing him. You know, my brother and I remember talking about Mr. Ebony earlier, in the Ebony Experience. Now, my brother and I, you know, we had weight belts before we was ever wrestlers. I still got the belt. It may be around here somewhere, and it's got Mr. Ebony 2 on it. on his belt was Mr. Ebony 1, you know. And that right there, you know, was something that I always did, you know, was want to be like my brother. You know, my brother started working out. I started working out, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just one of those things, you know. And then when the opportunity came, it was something he had really wanted to do, was, you know, become a wrestler. And he gave me the opportunity to try it. He asked, hey, I'm going to do this wrestling, man. How would you like to try this? You know, but it was $3,000 to go to the wrestling school. And I didn't have the money. And but the guy who I was working for, he sponsored me to go to the wrestling school. So, man, everything just worked out. But that's where I think the idea came from. It was all my brother's thinking.
So you got into the WCW. Y'all were the Harlem Heat. Where did the Harlem Heat idea come from? Was it something that the office pitched to y'all, or is it something y'all came up with? What was the story?
Well, I mean, actually, we had a big part in, you know, where we wanted to be from. We were from Houston, and we didn't, you know, Houston didn't sound like a tough enough place to be from.
Houston Heat.
It just didn't sound cool. we used to watch a lot of Shaft movies, you know what I mean? Cotton Comes to Harlem, you know, movies like that. And it was always a tough city, tough town to grow up in, you know, in Harlem, you know. And the Apollo was there, of course, you know. So we thought that would be really, really cool to call ourselves the Harlem Heat. You know what I mean? The hard part was the accent. You know, we had to make sure we didn't talk with a Texas twang.
It's like Steve Austin being from Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know. So we pulled it off. Harlem Heat was born. We got a chance. At first we was Kane and Cole. That didn't work out. It just didn't roll off very well. People had, you know, watched us on ESPN for a couple of years as Booker T and Stevie Ray, and that was my name, you know, and it sounded, you know, cool for him as well, you know. So we got a chance to, you know, get our old names back, which was really, really, I think, the beginning of us, you know, actually moving up.
Yeah, and becoming like y'all's own kind of entity within the WCW. And they stuck y'all with like a lot of different managers, kind of escorts. You had Sherry Martel.
Yeah.
Man, who's the other? Who's the guy?
Colonel Parker.
Okay.
Jackie.
How'd you like working with Colonel Parker?
Well, I didn't like it at all. I mean, he came later on in our wrestling careers.
I don't think it was a good idea.
It wasn't a good mix, and that's just with the South mentality, you know, to do something like that. But you know, for me, it was always about the entertainment. I never looked at the character that I was going to be playing, other than going out and making it the best, you know, I could possibly make it, you know, any given night, you know, to go out there and try to get something out of nothing, no matter what it was. And that's what the business really is about. It's not about the wrestling. It's about going out and entertaining the fans and making them feel a certain way when they watch it.
Because, I mean, it's a sentiment with a lot of people I've talked to. No one can sell an eye poke like Booker T can sell an eye poke.
Hey, man, you know, that's the thing. You know, that's the thing. You know, knowing how to, you know, get every ounce out of, you know, what you're out there doing. You know why you're out there. You know that it's not about you. Know that the it's all about the band, not one member in the band.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why the Temptations still going right now strong. You know, this many years later, you know, all the guys are dead, but the group is still going.
Yeah.
Because it was always about, you know, the group, and that's what it's been about with me. You know, throughout my career, it's about going out there and just creating and giving the fans something to walk away from, just like when I walked away from those karate movies, you know, wanting to kick somebody and chop somebody, you know.
Oh, man, I saw Fast and Furious earlier, and I was hitting corners
exactly,
in my truck.
Exactly, you know, like that, you know what I mean? It's one of those, it's like, just like that, because that made you feel a certain way when you were actually in the theater watching it. Otherwise, you'd have left that, man, that sucked, you know what I mean? You know, so, totally understand.
Now, I want to touch on this before we get out of your tag team career. When I first started coming around the ROW and you know, y'all gave me the chance to come and do the ring announcing, and I was telling people, I do the ring announcing for wrestling, and they're like, oh, who's coming? I say, it's Booker T. The first thing everybody, and I come from like a hip-hop world, the first thing everyone brings up is Hulk Hogan. We coming for you.
yeah, that was
Somebody asked me to ask that. They wanted me to ask you why you called them a nigga.
You know, it wasn't, I'm from the street, you know, and I was totally in the heat of the moment. It was totally a mishap. It was something I totally wish I could retract and take away, you know, put to rest. Because no one's never heard me say that word outside of that one time, you know, none of my peers.
Yeah.
None of my, people that, you know, you know, respect me and look up to me. You know, none of, you know, no one has never heard me say that word around my school.
There's never been around the gym, you know, never heard it. And I've been with him, what, 7 years now?
Yeah, yeah, no one's ever heard years me say now. That, you know what I mean? So it was totally out of character, but in character at the same time, you know. And I thought it would be something that would have hurt me throughout my career, too. You know, I thought it was something that, man, is something I'm never going to be able to take away. You know, people are always going to be able to refer back to it. You know, kind of like running for, you know, and being in politics.
Yeah.
It's something that they're always going to be able to bring up. You know, but, you know, I got through it. I fought through it. It was, you know.
I mean, did it cause a lot of friction in the office?
I didn't get any backlash off of it at all.
At all. You
know,
yeah.
No one actually ever said anything to me about it at all. You know what I mean?
Till YouTube came around,
yeah,
right?
Till YouTube.
Well, why do you think that is, though?
Because I was good at what I did. You know, I was up and coming. You know, I was afforded to make that one mistake, you know, and get away with it. I'm sure I wouldn't have been able to do that on a regular basis and get away with it. But I was always, you know, I always believed in my talent. I always knew how good I was. I always knew the company made money off of me. You know, so when they're making money, you know, things can wash away a little bit easier than not.
And I loved how Mean Gene didn't even react to it. He just kept going. He went to Stevie. But he saw Sherry's face was like.
Hey, you know, that's just, you know, one of those things that you go through and you just have to deal with.
Definitely. Now, so that was when you were still in Harlem Heat, and then I remember during your Hall of Fame speech again, you told a story about, I think it was Rick Martel didn't show up that night or couldn't wrestle or something, so they decided to put the TV title on you, right?
Well, what happened was Rick Martel forgot his boots. He didn't
bring in that preach to the wrestlers who are listening who don't know, like, that's like the number one sin,
you know,
right? Always have your gear.
You always bring your gear. You never leave your gear at home. That's a rule of thumb in wrestling. And you know, but Rick Martel at that time, he was a star. You know, I mean, he wouldn't be one of the guys you expect to, you know, bring your gear. If I didn't think I'm wrestling, I'm not going to bring my gear. You know, so he didn't bring his gear. He didn't prepare to wrestle that night. Disco Inferno had the television championship at that time. They wanted to get it off of him, and
for obvious reasons,
which would have been a better, I think, contrast me against Martel opposed to him against Martel when you look at it in hindsight.
Yeah,
you know, and the deal was I was going to drop the title to Rick Martel whenever they was going to put it on me that night, you know, and. They asked me if I'm, you know, ready to go. You know, Disco, you're going to be beating Disco Inferno for the television championship. It was my first singles title. I was excited. But more importantly, I was thinking, man, you know, man, they're going to put this title on me. They're not going to be able to get it off of me, you know. So I just was anticipating, you know, getting that title around my waist, going out and showing the crowd that, you know, man, Booker T can actually go out there and pull this off. And that's what I did, you know.
Definitely. Now, Kevin, you know, we stated earlier that you were definitely a long-time fan of the sport. And I think I've heard you say before that you were a WCW guy, right?
Definitely WCW guy.
Why were you WCW over WWF at the time?
I really didn't even know. I know it sounds crazy, but WWF was around. my parents were a little stricter.
Yeah.
WCW was a little bit more family-friendly.
Friendly.
And so just growing up, I grew up on WCW, TBS, Saturday mornings, that was where it started. You know, I was definitely a Saturday morning wake up, watch pro wrestling, watching Book go out there and do his thing, because I don't know why, but he was always on Saturday morning. And I find out later, it was the guys that wanted to work.
Were there for Saturday morning shows?
Saturday mornings. It was the guys that wanted to go out there and just wrestle and work all the time. You know, I asked him later. I was like, "Why were you always running? You did Nitro all the time, but you were always doing Saturday mornings." And then he told me, "You know, it's the guys that wanted to go out there and bust their asses."
I mean, not just Saturday morning, but you know, Saturday night, all the shows that guys didn't want to do. I wanted to make sure I took as much of the opportunity, the television time, putting myself out there, politicking from a certain perspective, you know, by going out in the ring and performing, you know, every night, trying to steal the show.
Yeah.
Even though I'm on the undercard, knowing guys had to go out and, you know, wrestle behind me, I still would want to go out there and shine where, you know, it's, you know, the seventh match on the card and people still thinking about the second match on the card, you know. Yeah. So that's what that was my game plan was, you know, to get that title around my waist, you know, prove to the world that, you know, I belonged as a singles competitor, you know, moving up the ladder.
Yeah.
You know, never thinking in a million years about the heavyweight championship, though. And that's the honest truth. I never thought about winning that title.
But see, it's true, though, because I, you know, when he's talking about, you know, there being so many guys in the card and, you know, remembering somebody, a lot of times on those shows, it was just, you know, Saturday night show, Saturday morning show. There'd be some guys that were in, you know, some guys that are out of shape, some job
enhancement
guys,
talent.
Enhancement talent.
Enhancement talent, not jobbers. Right,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Come on.
But one of the things was you always, Book went out there and gave it everything he had on those, even those enhancement shows where it wasn't, you know, the biggest deal. It wasn't Nitro. So a lot of those guys were just kind of going in there and calling it in and just kind of, you know, just getting through their matches. Book was still out there. You know,
I mean, but the thing was, guys, you got to understand, guys were making a lot of money back then.
Guaranteed money.
Guaranteed
right?
money. A lot of guys were, you know, they thought they were really big stars. You know, I mean, they were in a company. I mean, we were working for Ted Turner. I mean, you couldn't get no bigger than that. You know what I mean? As far as a boss and, you know, how far his money goes, you know, it was an unlimited amount of money.
Yeah.
That was being thrown around back then, you know, so it was a great time. It was one of the best times. I think perhaps to be in the business throughout all the history of the business, I think that was the best time for the wrestlers.
It was definitely like the biggest boom. It was pop culture. Wrestling was pop culture at the time. You know, people like, you know, Hogan and Austin and them, and they were like mega stars.
The NWO, of course, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Changed the name of the game as far as made WCW cool.
Is that what put WCW in the forefront over the WWF? Was it the NWO?
I mean, I think so, just because, you know, it was always about the good old boy clique and the good old boy system, you know. But when the NWO came along, you know, Hogan, you know, Kevin Nash, you know, Scott Hall, X-Pac, those guys made it cool to watch WCW again. They were the bad guys, and people wanted to be like them. So they really made it they retro. They took it to another level, and I think they were the driving force at that time behind WCW.
And I know they continued pretty much throughout the whole time WCW was in existence. And which brings you, I want to touch a couple more things in WCW and WWE, and then I really want to talk about ROW PWA. Now I remember the Bash at the Beach '99, right? The main event was originally booked as a Hulk Hogan, I think, versus Jeff Jarrett for the WCW Championship, right?
Yep.
And then there was the whole infamous, I don't know if it was a shoot or it was scripted, thing between Vince Russo and Hulk Hogan, right? And then the next match, a surprise match, I guess, was Jeff Jarrett versus Booker T for the WCW title.
Yeah,
can you talk to me a little bit about what happened that night, if what you remember?
You know, I've always found myself in certain situations. Somehow, I don't know, you know, how I got there. But like I say, winning the WCW championship was not anything on my mind. It wasn't on my radar. I didn't think that was something that would ever happen for me, you know. But I had found out about a couple of days before that I was going to be champ. I was going to be, you know, going against Jeff Jarrett, and I was going to be winning the title. And I was like, wow, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I mean, everything's changing for me, man. Overnight, you know, seemed like. But that night, of course, Hogan. I don't know how it all happened, but I know he wanted to wrestle for the title.
Yeah.
And I know he had creative control in his contract where he can do a whole lot of things without being questioned. And I don't think it had anything to do with me personally.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can honestly say that I don't think it had anything to do with me
was
personally.
Was your and Hogan's relationship good?
I wouldn't necessarily say it was good or bad. I mean, I really didn't know him. You know, I mean, he was an upper echelon guy.
Just a co-worker.
Yeah, yeah.
He does put in his book, though,
I spoke to him, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, but
He put you over
in the
book.
Oh, did
he? Yeah. You have like a chapter or something in his book about being a great worker and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So, obviously.
You didn't even know that, did you?
Well, no, I never knew that. You know, thing was, he respected me, I think, but him and I We did not have a relationship. I mean, you threw me off by saying that. What was I? What was I talking
you
about?
You were talking about, like, you know, y'all, the title, and you don't think it had anything to do with you.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, yeah, I'm serious. You threw me off with that one right there. I never knew that about Hogan. I appreciate that. Big shout out. Never in a million years I thought I was going to be winning the title. When I found out, I found out they had a meeting, and it was a lot of questions whether, you know, who should be the champion, you know, who should be the guy to carry the title. And from what I heard, everybody voted unanimously that it should be me. But it still was something in the back of their head. One, even after voting unanimous, it's like, yeah, but we can't do it.
You know what I mean? We want it, but Hogan
he's
has
a black guy. You know what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But
I mean, because it wasn't. I mean, you really didn't see too many black people become the heavyweight champion. I mean, Ron Simmons.
There was only one before me, and that was Ron Simmons. You know, and you know, so but Vince Russo, to his credit, I can honestly say he was the guy who stepped up and said, you know, it got to be Booker. And and they ran with me, you know. They put me in the position to go out and perform, and I found out about 2 minutes, actually about maybe 5 minutes before I went out that I was actually still going to be wrestling after the melee, after the chaos, you know. But I was like, okay. I mean, I had already wrestled once that night.
Yeah.
And now I was finding myself wrestling again.
Yeah.
This time it's for the world title. I'm like, man, how the hell did I end up in these situations? But, you know, I think I was put here for a reason. I don't think everything happened to me by accident or anything like that. I really think, you know, God had a plan, you know, for me, especially in this business. You know, I'm not supposed to be here, but I am, and
yeah.
I'm like, you know, I've done it all, and now I'm in the Hall of Fame. You know, and how did that happen? You know, to a kid from South Park, you just never can't question that. You know.
Now let's talk about PWA and ROW, and then we'll go back to some WWE stuff a little bit later. 2005, right? You had an idea to start your own wrestling school with your brother at the time, right?
Yeah, that was the idea. It didn't work out. Things kind of, you know, didn't work out. We saw two different visions. My thing was, I went to work with, you know, young people, you know, teach, you know, I don't need any teachers running around here telling me what to do. <You know? laughs> So, that was the idea, but give, young people a, place to learn this from a proper perspective. Try to learn it right the first time if they're getting into it, you know, for the first time, you know, instead of, you know, getting into it and stepping in mud and having to backtrack and go all over to get
bad habits are hard to break.
Yeah, exactly. And then they find themselves 5-6 years in the business and they're really not even in the business, you know. So just trying to give, you know, the right springboard, the right knowledge, something that I wish I had when I was coming up, a place to be able to, you know, a home to be able to do this on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know, and then give them a chance to see something real and be a part of something real, and let it grow at the same time. And they see their hard work, you know, and they see their payoff at the same time.
But so you started, you know, the school, so it didn't work out with your brother, but you continued to pursue it anyway, and the PWA was born. Right?
yeah, you know. I mean, there was a lot of mistakes in the beginning. You know, we was working on a shoestring budget.
Yeah.
But we was pulling it off. We never at any point, you know, had to close the school down over our tenure. I mean, we're going on, what, 8 years now, 9 years?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, still rolling, you know. And it's been one of those things, though. It's been a learning experience. You know, we made so many mistakes in the beginning, you know. We perhaps lost a lot of money in the beginning that, you know, we could have saved and, you know, put in other areas, you know. But that's just a part of life, you know.
Trial and error.
Yeah, you got to learn, you know, from your mistakes. But I really think the idea has been, you know, point on from the beginning. We've had a lot of guys come through, you know, the school. We've had, you know, a lot of international talent, you know, come through the school. We, you know, got talent, you know, that's, you know, in the developmental system, you know, in WWE. You know, so it's just a matter of trying to keep doing that. You know, the more we can produce, the more we can produce, you know, get to that next level, it's only going to make, you know, ROW look that much better. It's only going to make my training, you know, concepts look that much better and show people that, you know, Booker T is still here, just from a different perspective.
Yeah, you might not be in the ring anymore, per se, but you're still training people. Now, Kevin, When did you come into the picture?
I was
with
actually
PWA.
Yeah, the original. Booker started a school. Him and Stevie started it, and then they. I don't know if y'all actually closed down for a second.
Yep,
y'all closed down, and there was a big reopening. You know, I heard it on the radio. It was actually the Pride called me. I was out hunting actually, and he called me and said, "Hey, I heard this thing. Booker T's having people come to his school. He's gonna be there Wednesday through Friday. This Wednesday is the first weekend or whatever it was." So I said, "All right, well, come pick me up." That was a Wednesday. He called me. I said, "All right, well, come pick me up." Pick me up. I came right there. We walked around the school. Book was super cool with everybody. You know, Pride couldn't start, you know, right away. It was another guy, Alex Villarreal. And it was, "All right, Book, we'll see you tomorrow." And that was the beginning of it, you know.
But how was it walking into the school and seeing Booker there?
It was intimidating, but it's funny with somebody that you've watched for so long.
You feel like you knew him already?
I feel like, you know, and he was the exact same person that you see on TV. You know, he's got the same good spirit. He's, you know, a good guy, made us feel comfortable. Second day in the ring, he got us in there and worked us over. And he's like, "All right, you guys obviously want to be here." But it was something I've never seen before, because I had trained a little bit, but I trained in a place that was behind a barbecue shack that it was their storage, and they had a ring in there. And that was how I originally trained, a boxing ring behind a barbecue shack.
No, that was a hard mat.
Yeah, and I walked into Books, and it's this huge building with two rings, weight equipment. They had boxing mats, you know, bags everywhere. And, you know, then you have Booker there, and, you know, being very honest with you, I've been to other schools, and they were promised you the world, and, "Oh, we're going to do this for you," and, "Oh, we'll do this." And he pretty much told us, you know, "This, I'm not going to, you know, sugarcoat it. I'm not going to guarantee you're going to get a WWE contract." He's like, "I'm going to train you. You know, make sure you work hard, and whatever you put in is what you're going to get out." And like I said, I heard that on Wednesday. On a Thursday, I was at school training.
Just like that.
That was it. I mean, and from then, it's been, you know,
journey.
It's been a journey. Oh, man.
Do you remember Kev coming in?
Yeah, I remember. You know,
did you think that he had any potential? Or,
not a chance.
I mean, you know, Kevin used to get knocked around, knocked out. You know, I mean, Charlie Haas knocked him out one time, you know.
He actually put me in the hospital for the night before my TMJ.
But the thing is, in the business, you know, you got to find, you know, what you're good at.
Yeah.
A lot of times, you know, it's in the ring. A lot of times it's, you know, behind the scenes.
On the mic, maybe.
Behind the camera. Yeah. From a writing perspective, you know, and that's what Kevin's done, you know, here. You know, I mean, he knows the business, you know, and that's the thing. It's like a good coach, you know. Some great coaches, you know, never played in the big game, but they was on the team that won the championship.
Yeah.
You know, they knew exactly what it took all season. They saw it. They was right around it. They picked up on it. They become great coaches, you know, and that's what Kevin has become. You know, he's been a great coach, great mentor for the guys that's coming in, as well as, you know, a great teacher at the same time. You know, you just got to have all of those qualities to know what it takes to be in this business, because, you know, just like Josh Matthews, he's a commentator, but he won Tough Enough.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I remember watching him.
So you got to know where you fit in, and that's what Kevin has done well.
Now, you had PWA. Y'all were doing some shows, some house shows, and you know, getting a name. You know, I heard of PWA. I always knew Booker had a school, and I was always a huge mark for Booker T, because he was just because you were from Houston, you know, and I was always excited. And then all of a sudden, you know, ROW comes around. It was a rebranding of PWA. Who came up with that concept, and where did it all come from?
Well, I just thought it was time to change, you know. Learning from, you know, one of the greatest minds in the business and promoters, you know, I just thought it was time for us to, you know, evolve and, you know, rebrand and, you know, freshen up. Reality of wrestling is something that I want people to be able to see and know that this is the reality of wrestling, from a perspective that, you know, these are young guys going out there performing, and if they can do it, you can do it too. You know, it's really not that hard if you put your heart in, and, you know, strap your boots up and try to learn, you know, the game, and that's what Reality of Wrestling is all about. It's about young guys going out there performing. And then we do the thing like with you, you know, reality check, of course, and let guys...
on feet.com/BookerT right now. Make exactly, sure you go watch that.
Exactly. And that's the thing right there, you know, they get a chance to see the guys from a realistic perspective, and then they get a chance to see their wrestling persona, and they know it's not real.
Yeah.
I never, you know, at one time when I was coming up as a kid, thought wrestling was real. I never thought that.
Never.
But it was never, not once.
Yeah, I did, man.
I never did, but I thought it was so cool. I thought it was so cool to, you know, shoot a guy off the ropes and he go running and come back and you clothesline him. You know, I mean, it was just...
Man, I was a believer, like seriously, until like a late age. Like,
you know what? You know what? I really think that's what, you know, propelled me to be a good wrestler. Because from a kid, I knew it was entertainment. Yeah. I never once, you know... went to school going, man, you know, man, those guys tried to kill each other last night or anything like that. You know, it was always
a great
show.
I started figuring it out when I was like, no way, if you sling someone into the ropes, they're going to run back towards you. Well, I was like, that just doesn't make sense to me.
I always thought it was real.
It doesn't supposed to make sense.
When did you find out, Peaches?
I watched Thursday Night Wrestling. I don't remember which one it was.
That was probably SmackDown.
It was probably Thunder.
I used to watch that when I was younger because I have a brother and he watched it. So that was how I bonded with him, was while he was watching it. And I would see them with the chairs and all the tables, and I would be like, they're crazy. Like, why would you let somebody hit you with a table?
Yeah, that's part of it too. Why would you see a guy jumping off and banging, splashing?
It wasn't far later in life.
You see Mick Foley going off the set.
Yeah, that's real. You know what I mean?
There's nothing fake about that.
There's nothing fake about that.
You had the thing of you thought, you know, new wrestling was fake, and I, or you know, that was not fake, but you know that it was, you know, it was entertainment. I had the same theory and concept, and now that I've been in the business much longer, you start realizing, man, I wish it was that fake.
Right.
The thing is,
wrestling.
It's entertaining. It's real.
Wrestling has been real to me. You know, I've always taken it, you know, as a real experience when I walk out in that ring, knowing that something can happen. You know, and it may be my last match. You know, but still knowing that I got to go out here and, you know, this guy's my best friend, but I'm still gonna go out there and beat him up. You know, and that's what the business is right there. That's the beauty of it.
It's when I feel like I've kind of, I guess I took from you some now lately of every time I go into doing any indie show, doing anything like that, I always go in with the mentality of I'm going in for a fight, and I pump myself up thinking, all right, man, I'm going to knock the crap out of this guy. I'm going to wait for him to hit me. Because I used to go in and just kind of be like, all right, we're going to play. We're going to have some fun. And over the last like year or so, it's been, man, I'm going to go in there. I start getting myself pumped up. I start really thinking like, oh, man, I'm going to try and hit this guy as hard as I can.
Yeah, but you're going to do it safe.
In a safe way, of course. Yeah. But I go in thinking of it now and just being cardio-wise and just being everything. Like, I go into it like I'm going for a real event.
And that's the thing. You got to think like it's a real fight, you know. And that's one thing that's been good about, you know, reality of wrestling, you know, from the beginning, you know, from the first episode to now, you know.
Oh,
you can
see the change.
Oh, man.
I caught up on all the episodes the other day.
I mean, you can see, I mean, it's totally evolved. It's totally turned into a monster. It's like an animal that's just getting bigger and bigger, you know.
Every time.
It's going to be breathing fire, you know, sooner or later, you know, and that's the thing right there.
You can only get it past the fire marshals, we will breathe
fire. Yeah, exactly. and that's the thing, you know, nothing, you know, great, you know, starts off great, you know. You have to build to it, you know. I mean, Muhammad Ali, you know, he wasn't great when he first started, you know what I mean? But he thought he was. He said that he was, you know. Guys like Walter
spoke
Payton.
Spoke into existence.
You know? Exactly, you know what I mean? Great, you know, like guys like Walter Payton, you know what I mean? You saw the greatness in him. Guys like Mike Tyson, you saw the greatness in him. But those guys had to really, really work hard to become who they were, you know. And that's what we're doing with ROW. We're starting at the bottom. You know, we are the, you know, flagship of Texas wrestling. You know, we're getting ready to take the thing on the road and start doing a whole lot more in a whole lot of different cities. Bringing wrestling to them instead of them having to think about coming to us, you know. And that's what this thing is about. It's about getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And hopefully one day, you know, we'll have our own local stars right here in the city, you know. And that's what I remember about myself when I came up. I was G.I. Bro. And I was on television here on Channel 39, and you know, I would go places like the bank, and people were like, "Oh man, that's G.I. Bro." So I was a local celebrity.
How many names have you gone by?
Booker T, of course, King Booker, G.I. Bro, Cole, I think that's it. Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, so outside of the Booker T, which one would come? I guess is your second favorite person that you invited
King
while being
Booker,
there.
Of course, you know, King Booker was.
King Booker was King, the man.
King That's, Booker was, you know, a legend in his own mind. He was like a myth. You know?
I think there should have been two separate Hall of Fame inductions. One for Booker T, one for King Booker.
Yeah, I tell you, it was a great time in my career.
What's the difference between King Booker and Booker T?
King Booker is the look at the little character right behind you right there.
He's the most majestic wrestler of all time.
He was like Camelot, you know. Like Camelot was like every week on Friday Night SmackDown.
And it started after you won King of the Ring, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, and that's the thing, you know. And
I got to say, before you expound on that, like, you know, I remember like King of the Ring, like, say, 98, 99. It started to kind of go down. Like, it didn't really – I know you as a fan probably. Like, I remember Ken Shamrock won. And, you know, normally when you won King of the Ring, like Steve Austin or Bret Hart or Owen Hart or Triple H, you got to the next level. And then I remember Ken Shamrock won, and then he didn't really go. He stayed in the mid-card guy. You know, he got
Ken
the
Shamrock,
IC strap.
Billy Gunn.
Billy Gunn. You know, only got Edge. But then when you came, I felt like that's when King of the Ring meant something again, because it wasn't too long after that that you got the world heavyweight title, right?
Well, you know, I mean, it didn't happen on its own.
Yeah.
Like I said, I always tried to get everything I could out of, you know, what I was doing. And no one ever thought I was going to create a British accent and start, you know, throwing my pinky finger up instead of five.
And you guys,
times.
He did that in the school,
no,
too.
Yeah, no,
right.
no one ever
was so
thought
great.
That.
So
know?
Good. We had to get him to do it at school, at training. We had
Can
him doing.
Can we get the British accent?
No.
I think I'm retired.
I got to be in character to do that kind of stuff, really. I don't.
Camera's got to be on, right?
Yeah, I mean, literally. When I put my boots and tights on, I literally will become a different person. I will become the character. I don't think I could do it if I'm not in that mode.
Yeah.
I always tell people I've never been my actual self on television, other than, you know, when I was doing my Hall of Fame speech. Every time people have, you know, watched me on television, I've always been a character, so it's never been me. I've always been able to act like someone else a lot better than I can act like myself, I think. And I think that's what enabled me to go through my wrestling career, you know, not having a whole lot of experience in what I was doing, but I could act like I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, perception's reality. Like, even when you were in prison, when you were saying, like, you pretended like you were
exactly,
the dog on
exactly,
the
same thing. If you act like it 9 times out of 10, people will believe it. You know,
it, yeah.
You put on a, you know, you got a clean cut, and, you know, you got a, you know, white coat on and a stethoscope, and you walk through a hospital, somebody may ask you for help.
Yeah.
Just because you look the part, you know, and that's the thing right there. You just got to be able to, you know, transform yourself to, you know, whatever the character is, just like any other good actor. You know, that's why, you know, the Morgan Freemans, you know, the guys like that got so much range and can play so many different characters.
Play anything.
So then I have another question. It says if...
It's from Twitter?
Yeah, of course my questions are from Twitter. Is there anybody that you never got to wrestle that you wanted to?
Just Shawn Michaels. Is the only guy that I never got a chance
to. Never worked?
No. He's the only guy I never got a chance to wrestle, I think, that I wanted to wrestle. I just from needing to know how good I really was. And doing it with Shawn, I think I could have really, really proved it. You know, but maybe it wasn't meant for that match to happen. You know what I mean? You know, just maybe it just wasn't meant. Because there was plenty of time for us to have gotten it done, but I just don't think that match was meant to happen.
Mm-hmm. Man, but you know, you talked about characters, you talked about local stars, and I remember when I worked the first ROW show, my first ROW show, to me, I thought the biggest star in ROW was the man sitting to my right. The biggest pop of the night went for not Kevin... It went for a Kelly Kevin, and I'm not going to lie. I did not know where you were going with this character, because you remember, I came in like wide-eyed. I didn't know what was going on,
and
Kevin comes out here. I'm standing in the middle of the ring, and he's got makeup on, and he's got his hair like straightened, and then he comes, and he pinches my nipple.
I was
like, what is going
it's
on?
Like that character, you know, Kevin didn't know what it was in the beginning.
Where did it come? Tell people what it is, if they don't know.
Are you like a gay character? Are you a female? What are you?
You know, we really don't.
Goldust never was a gay character.
Yeah, Goldust was a gay character.
But he was just kind of weird. You know what I mean?
And, I'm playful. And I like being, you know, having fun. A little androgynous, maybe.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, hey, if I look pretty in pink and I feel pretty in pink, then I'm going to wear pink. All right. And we can actually, this is a good time. We can clear something up and we can have, you know, because I don't think me and Book have ever talked about this. So this will be a good thing. I went to a WWE show, and he probably knows a little more in this about than I do. I went to a WWE show that he invited me to, and I was very, it's my first time ever get to go to a WWE show. I was in the back. We were just kind of walking around doing our thing. A couple days later, Books just got this big smile on his face, and that was back when we were training at the gym was rough and tough. It was, you know, 1,000 squats, you know, going through our thing and weeding people out. And Charmel was our drill sergeant at the time too.
Yeah.
Queen Charmel was our drill sergeant with a whistle. And
I'm sure she was a good drill sergeant.
Oh, she was
bad,
the best.
Yeah.
Oh, we when she was there. But anyways, they just came in smiling. They said, "We need to talk to you." And the legend goes that Triple H saw me down, long hair. I don't know. Thought I was a girl. I don't know what the scenario was. But and booking them said, "We want to talk to you. You might not like it, but we want you to run with this," and laid out the whole character for me. And it was actually one of those things that I was, of course, you know, when you first get told something like that, you're just like, oh, man, I don't want to do this. But coming from Booker T and coming from somebody like Triple H saying, you know, it was me and one other guy that even got mentioned that whole day.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of an honor, you know, something that. He said, "You don't know if it's a rib or not at first, but you know it's still something, and it probably still to this day it was a rib." And
nah, that wasn't a rib. That was true. Nah.
So did Triple H come to you backstage? Was like, "I have this idea for"?
No. He was just saying, "I see something in that kid, man. You know what I mean? I mean, of course, you know he's gonna have to work on this and work on that. You know what I mean? But I thought it was a girl. You know, and it was like that. You know, so it was never one of those things where they were saying, "Well, we're going to give him a job if he do this."
Yeah,
you know. But I thought, you know, man, I mean, I think it'll be something cool. It'll give him a chance to, you know, work the girls as well as work the guys, you know. And then if he does it good enough, you know, people are going to wonder, man, if this is a girl or a guy, you know. Then, you know, once he really start, you know, carrying it to the show and bringing it to him, you know. The male fans start liking it, you know what I mean? They like it more than the girls do, you know. So it's one of those things, men sometimes have those fetishes. You know?
But so, it's been crazy of the people that, you know, it's funny of the difference between indie star or indie guys. I don't want to say indie stars ever. Indie guys versus the professional guys. Because anytime I've had to do anything with a professional, you know, somebody from TNA, somebody from WWE, you know, one of the guys that comes in, they just get wrestling. They see a character. They're like, "Oh, man, that'd be so much fun to work with." Or, "Oh, you could do this or that." And they're always throwing in their 2 cents and ideas. And I've always just been really appreciative of that because I know I'm not the biggest guy. I'm not your prototypical, you know, who's going to be a wrestler. You know, I'm skinny, I'm tall, I'm lanky. You know, it's a godsend. You know, I didn't look at that at the beginning, but it really is a godsend that that kind of happened and I got put in that position because it's gotten a lot more out of what I could have done. Because
it's gotten over with the fans, too.
I mean, Kevin's the only guy, you know, Mick Foley came here and wanted to actually do something with Kevin, you know, so.
Oh, that's, that
you know,
awesome,
so, really, I mean, you don't just get that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't do it because he thought Kevin was a great worker. He thought he did it because he liked the character.
Yeah.
You know, and he wanted to go out and do something funny with the character, you know, so, you know, when you can put an eye on yourself in this business, you know, you don't have to be great or anything. People don't have to talk about you like that. They just have to say, "Man, this guy's pretty good. I like this guy." You know, and you might can get a job, you know, but you got to first and foremost put yourself in position to get a job. Otherwise, you ain't getting no job.
Did the name Kelly Kevin, was it from Kevin Kelly? Because that's what I always thought. You remember Kevin Kelly back in the day?
Yeah, it really didn't. Book told me to come up with a name. I wasn't even thinking about Kevin Kelly at the time. I said, "Hey, what about Kevin Kelly?" And Book was like, "It's too Kelly Kevin."
Kelly Kevin.
Yeah.
So many things in wrestling.
Because of Kelly Kelly.
Yeah, yeah.
Kelly, oh, Kelly. Okay.
Kelly Kelly was
okay.
hot. Yeah, that you was know, Kevin. At the time, you know, so you couldn't put Kevin first, you know. Yeah.
So
you
Kelly know, Kevin.
It had to be,
Kevin,
you know.
Born,
had to be,
and then yeah. it became good because it was a guy, girl. You, yeah. You know, you could, when you announced
go out
it,
the way with it.
It was a fun thing to do, and it still is fun. You know, I'm doing a lot more behind the scenes now. So, I, you know, I, of course, do still get out in the shows and have some fun, shake my butt, you know, have a good time. But
there was a kissing spot in the tag match recently.
It happens, you know. I mean, it interesting. Happens.
Hey,
it happens,
so you got to be able to
go. She has no idea what that means. Explain yeah. to her what happened.
I mean, the guy was getting uppity with me, and he started throwing some punches. I couldn't throw back, so what are you going to do? You got to distract him. Give him a little kiss. Throws him off his game. Hey, 1, 2, 3, I pinned him. You got to do what you got to do to win.
It was a nice finish.
But, you know, it's entertainment. It's entertainment, and it doesn't have to be what you do in your real life. You know, Booker's not a king. Well, maybe in his own mind, every once in a while, he's around the gym.
He thinks he's a king.
No, the thing is, you can't take the business serious. You know,
no, it's entertainment.
That's why I try to, you know, teach all my students. You know, losing can be a good thing. Yeah. You know, going out and, you know, actually losing in a match. You know, I mean, it could be like your most fun match you ever have. I lost many, many, many matches. It never was about my one loss record. They don't count those in wrestling. It doesn't go against, you know, who you're going to wrestle next week.
There's actually, though, there's a site out there, I don't know if you know this, that has, just from Googling you, there's a site that has your whole win-loss record.
Wow.
They went and found every match.
I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know it. It doesn't matter, though, you know. It doesn't matter, you know, because it's always been about the entertainment. It's always been about going out and, you know, the performance. It's never been about, you know, anything else other than that, you know. And that's what I think, you know, helped me make it, you know, helped me get, you know, to the next level, not thinking about how much money somebody else was making, you know, who was, you know, I mean, you know, how long is this guy going to be on top, opposed to me trying to put myself in position to get on top, you know.
Definitely. Now, I want to tell a little anecdote of my own, just because I don't think I've ever shared this with y'all. You're talking about the first time you met Booker, right? I remember I was on Twitter, which I'm a big fan of Twitter, and I saw Booker T's Twitter account tweet out looking for new play-by-play announcers, right? You know, send info over to Paul Cook. And not even thinking about it, I remember I threw my name in the hat. I just saw it there. I decided to email a little resume over. I think 3 or 4 weeks went by. You know, I wasn't even thinking about it. And my band, we're about to go do an interview for this local college thing. And I got a phone call from a California number. I'll never forget it. And it was Paul on the other line. He's like, hey, this is Paul Cook, Booker T's Reality of Wrestling. And I swear, I was like, wait, what? And then, you know, we set up an interview. I remember walking in here, and Kevin was here, and Paul was here. And it was me and one other guy commentating. And I remember when he started, he had like this great voice. And I was like, crap. There's no way I'm getting this, you know, because I think I only called a couple football games back in my day. And I left, and then I got a phone call back from Paul saying, hey, our ring announcer's sick. You know, can you come? Booker wants to meet you. Can you come do the ring announcing? And at the time, I had this thing that JR had where half of my face wouldn't move, right? And I couldn't close my eye. And it was so awkward because I remember coming in. Don't laugh, Peaches. I remember coming in here. And I actually remember sitting outside for about an hour on the little metal folding chair. And at first I thought, I think Paul's ribbing me. I was like, I don't think Booker's in there. I was like, I think I'm being ribbed here or being tested. And then I remember he came in here and I sat down on the couch and you started talking to me. And I remember there was a fan or something that was on because it was blowing right inside the eye that I couldn't close. And then anytime I would try to blink, I'd be like this. And I was like, God, Booker probably thinks this kid is retardedly stupid. And I just remember being like wide-eyed and starstruck. And then point of the story, I went out and Kevin pulled me aside. He was like, hey, you have Tourette's or something? And I was like, no. And I tried to explain it the best I could. I remember going home.
He was
in my
so embarrassed.
I remember
called me right after and told me the whole story. He's like,
well,
I'm so embarrassed.
Well, the reason I did, and this is the first time I've ever even said this before anywhere, I think I told Book years ago, the reason I asked him is because I did grow up with Tourette's, and
okay.
I had to deal with it my whole life. I still deal with it. Not as bad as people, you know, imagine it on TV and all that kind of stuff. But
I have
it is,
a friend that has it
yeah,
like that,
it is an issue. And I remember there were guys in the business, and I don't even know if they had it or not. I remember I thought Goldberg had it because he'd always be twitching and doing stuff. And just knowing that maybe somebody else that was doing something, you know, had the same thing you did and had to go through the same battles and struggles, kind of like Book's thing of people that have gone to jail, and now he's inspiration talking to them.
Yeah.
You were in here, I could tell you were so nervous. And it totally backfired.
I get nervous, which
is totally backfired on me because I was going to go up there and be like, "Hey, buddy, don't worry." You know, like, because I saw it. And obviously, that's what it was to me.
Yeah.
And right. So I was just going to go and tell
like,
you. Know,
literally, I had to use every muscle in my eye to blink or whatever. And I was just like, "Man, Booker's going to be like, nah, we don't want that kid on TV. Get that sucker out of here."
No, man. It's about trying to spot talent, trying to spot the right thing for, you know, ROW, you know, more than anything. You know, it's about the company. It's not about me. And, you know, we need, you know, fresh young people on board that's got fresh ideas, you know, that's willing to, you know, work, you know, at building something, you know. And like I say, we never know how big this thing is going to get, but if we don't try, we definitely know how big it's going to get, you know. So that's just, was that whole thing, you know, about, you know, our first talk, you coming on board, you being a part of something, you know. That we try to make you feel like you're a part of something when you're around here, you know. We don't have a whole lot, but we try to treat our guys, you know, with the utmost respect, you know, that we possibly can. We try to, you know, guide them in a direction where they can possibly do something in life, you know, and make it, not just in the wrestling business, because this is just a small part of the big picture. It really is. I mean, the wrestling is just really just a small part of the big picture. These guys can come in here and, you know, learn how to handle themselves as men, handle their responsibilities, you know, when they leave here, you know, with their ladies and whatnot and their kids, you know, then I feel like I've done my job.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
Definitely. And, you know, and I just want to say on record, I very much appreciate the both of you. One, for letting me become a part of ROW, two, for sitting down with this interview.
Definitely.
I definitely, the first time I did meet Booker, though, I'm not going to lie to you, when I left, I called her. I think I called him. I was marking out on the phone. I was like, "Hey, Booker. Booker just said I'm a good-looking guy."
He gets frustrated talking to me about wrestling because I'm always like, "Okay, Brad."
Like, I'll go on and on. But then after that, though, I the other day we were hosting a fashion show, right? And I was driving down the middle. I was downtown Houston, turning a left on Prairie Street, and this guy walked right in front of my truck. I had to slam on the brakes. And I looked at him. I'm like, "Yo, that guy looks like Scott Steiner." I was like, "He looks exactly like Scott Steiner." And then I looked on Twitter, and I saw that Scott Steiner was walking around downtown. Someone was like, "I just saw Scott Steiner."
Wow.
And I was like, "Wait, that was Scott Steiner." And I was late to hosting the show.
He calls me like, "I saw Scott Steiner." I'm like, "Oh, I don't know who that is."
It was last weekend.
Yeah, they had Comic Con.
Yeah,
Comic Palooza. Yeah, he was there.
And
yeah.
Then even walking to the back, I was watching. So I think Cedric and someone were working in the ring, and I sat down. And I felt this big presence sitting next to me, and I look, and I'm like, "Oh, hey, great colleague."
Like, yeah, right. Yeah.
But after meeting someone like Booker T, Kevin, I'm sure you can attest to this. I it doesn't really get much higher than Booker T. And now this is the last question I want to say, and then we'll wrap it up. When you got the call, I don't know if it was Vince or whoever called you and said, "Booker, you know, we want to put you in the WWE Hall of Fame." How was that for you?
Well, it was kind of shocking,
yeah.
I think would be the right term, you know, for lack of a better word. Shocking because I never look at myself as being a Hall of Fame guy.
Yeah.
I never look at myself as being a guy that accomplished enough to be in the Hall of Fame. You know, I don't look at myself like that. I look at Booker T like that.
Yeah, okay.
But I don't look at myself like that. And I always have to be able to separate the two in order to stay level and, you know, grounded. But it's a great honor, something that I, you know, I cherish. I got my ring on. I wear it all the time.
Right next to the Paul Bosch ring.
Yeah, right next to my Paul Bosch ring. And, you know, it's a dream that came true that I never had also. You know, I just want to be good at what I did. I always want to lead a business, and guys say, "Man, Book, man, he's pretty good, man. He's a pretty cool dude." You know, and that was it. I would really been happy with that. You know, but to be able to thank the fans, you know, go through the journey, have the opportunity to walk out on stage in front of 20,000 people and tell them, hey, man, I really thank you guys for this 20-year ride that you guys have afforded me. You know, I appreciate, if it wasn't for you guys, it wouldn't be, you know, a Booker T, you know, those guys cheering for me and bringing the signs, you know, and pumping me up on a, you know, nightly, weekly basis. I wouldn't be here, you know. So that was the coolest part, I think, for me, was to have gotten through the journey, got to the other side, thank the fans, and now get ready for the next chapter of, you know, what Booker T is about to, you know, go on.
Any chance of ever returning to the ring?
No chance.
You're done?
Yeah, I mean, it's a young man's sport, you know, and I really don't want to try to fool myself at thinking, you know, I can go out there and perform and, you know, handle that schedule or anything like that. I always want to know when to get out of the business. I never want to be an old wrestler. I love, you know, still being able to, you know, work out. I love coming in, you know, getting in the ring and rolling around a little bit. But that's as far as it goes. It hurts. It really does. Yeah. It's a lot of pain involved, you know, and you really have to have it, your hard hat on 24/7 to be able to deal with it. And I took my hard hat off a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just get a select spinaroonie every now and then.
Maybe a Rumble appearance here, you know, something like that. You know,
I'd look forward to that.
I wouldn't mind a Mania match, you know, just to, you know, for the payoff, you know.
Yeah.
But, other than that, you know, I don't see myself going out there and, you know, trying to do that. It's really, really rough. And I give all the young guys, you know, all of our young WWE superstars, I get all those guys a lot of credit, a lot of praise, a lot of props goes out to those guys that's carrying, you know, the business right now into the next level, to the next stage, into the future. You know, who's to come next? Who's going to be the next Booker T? That's what I'm looking for. You know, it's not about me anymore. It's about the business.
Definitely. You about to say something?
All right, fans, let's make ROW big enough that we can actually convince Book to get in the ring one time. All right,
hey,
let's make it big enough.
I might get in the ROW ring.
Yeah, you know?
But I won't be getting enough
subscribers.
Like I say, I might be getting an ROW ring, but
if we can hit a certain number of subscribers,
we might be able to talk
about it. Exactly, you know, exactly. But other than that, you know, my time is up. My 23-year career has been stellar. I've had no major surgeries or anything like that. And I've been blessed and so fortunate to have been a part of, you know, the sport of sports entertainment. I really don't know where I would be if I wasn't, you know, where I am right now. But I can honestly say I really thank everybody for what they have done for Booker T.
Well, definitely. Everyone, y'all can follow Booker T on Twitter at BookerT5X or on Instagram at BookerTROW. You can follow Kevin at KK_Burn on Twitter. You can see ROW. Tell them where you can find ROW action.
ROW at the BookerTROW on YouTube. And you can also get us on feed, feed.com/BookerT. And you guys, it is an amazing show. We've come so far. You know, me and Booker have put pretty much our heart and souls into this business. You know, we work daily. Booker's one of the most busy people in the world. You know, he's on the road, and then every day after that, he's in here with me, and we're working on things. He's working on things on his own. We put a lot of work into this, so we appreciate every fan that comes out. We really do. Every fan that subscribes to our Twitter feed.
And remember, for the cost of a Red Bull.
For the cost of a Red Bull.
You can get a Red Bull, baby.
You can get feed.com/BookerT.
I mean, not just that. Not just, you know, our wrestling. You know, I mean, we do plan on bringing you guys a whole lot more outside of the box. You know, funny stuff. A little bit of entertainment as well. But we plan on doing a whole lot. But more importantly, we need you guys to help us out. Come along the ride. Come along this journey. And be a part of what we're trying to do here. And like I say, without you guys, wouldn't be no Booker T. Wouldn't be no ROW.
And you can see Booker, you can see Kevin, June the 8th, ROW live in Clear Lake at the Clear Lake Sports and Recreation Complex at 16511 Diana Lane. And on that note, Booker, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show. Kevin, you too. Peaches, you got any closing words?
No, I'm good. I learned a lot.
Yeah, are you a wrestling fan now? Are you gonna come to ROW?
Talk to some of your Twitter followers, you know, and
Oh, Peaches has the juice on social media. Yeah,
get the scoop on Booker T, the real Booker T.
I mean, I Googled you before I got here.
DJ Motai, any closing words?
Not really. I don't think so.
Man of silence over here.
Man,
he is intense on this message board. He's the tech guy.
Tech guy. He's trying to make sure all the teching is done right.
Yeah.
Good job.
Well, everybody, this has been another edition of the Brad Gilmore Show on demand every morning, every Monday morning. Peaches on iTunes.
It's still Wednesday.
But it's we do all the shows on Wednesday and air them. They don't need to know that it's fake Monday mornings. Remember, hashtag fake Monday morning. All right. Once again. One of my favorite interviews of all time. I'm flustered, Peaches. It's hot in here. My cheeks are red. Hot, don't judge me. All right, Peaches. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But everyone, tune in next week. Brad Gilmore Show on Demand. Peace.
Hi, this is Booker T, 5-time WCW champion, and you're listening to the Brad Gilmore Show. Hey, check out Reality of Wrestling on the Booker T ROW on YouTube. Like I always say, now can you dig that? Sucker!